Bingo, my friend Gregor Znidzicki shouted, pointing at a knife-thin separation between a slim strip of mudstone and a thicker layer of coarser rock right above it. The quarry we were exploring near the tiny Polish village of Zachelmi was once a source of sought-after limestone, but had long been abandoned. The surrounding landscape was littered with decaying smokestacks and other remnants of central Poland's industrial past. The maps deceitfully told us we were in the Holy Cross Mountains, a sad patch of hills once grand, but now nearly flattened by hundreds of millions of years of erosion. The sky was gray, the mosquitoes were biting, heat was bouncing off the quarry floor, and the only other people we saw were a couple of wayward hikers who must have made a tragically wrong turn. "This is the extinction," Gregors said, a big smile creasing the unshaven stubble of many days of fieldwork. "Many footprints of big reptiles and mammal cousins below, but then they disappear, and above we see nothing for a while, and then dinosaurs." We may have been peering at some rocks in an overgrown quarry, but what we were really looking at was a revolution. Rocks record history. They tell stories of deep ancient pasts long before humans walked the earth. And the narrative in front of us, written in stone, was a shocker. That switch in the rocks, detectable perhaps only to the overtrained eyes of a scientist, documents one of the most dramatic moments in Earth history. A brief instance when the world changed, a turning point that happened some 252 million years ago, before us, before woolly mammoths, before the dinosaurs, but one that still reverberates today. If things had unfolded a little differently back then, who knows what the modern world would be like? It's like wondering what might have happened if the Archduke was never shot. If we'd been standing in this same spot 252 million years ago, during a slice of time geologists call the Permian period, our surroundings would have been barely recognizable. No ruined factories or other signs of people. No birds in the sky or mice scurrying at our feet. No flowery shrubs to scratch us up or mosquitoes to feed on our cuts. All of those things would evolve later. We still would have been sweating, though, because it was hot and unbearably humid, probably more insufferable than Miami in the middle of the summer. Raging rivers would have been draining the Holy Cross Mountains, which were actually proper mountains back then, with sharp snowy peaks jutting tens of thousands of feet into the clouds. The rivers wound their way through vast forests of conifer trees, early relatives of today's pines and junipers, emptying into a big basin flanking the hills, dotted with lakes that swelled in the rainy season but dried out when the monsoons ended. These lakes were the lifeblood of the local ecosystem, watering holes that provided an oasis from the harsh heat and wind. All sorts of animals flocked to them. But they weren't animals we would know. There were slimy salamanders bigger than dogs, loitering near the water's edge and occasionally snapping at a passing fish. Stocky beasts called pariasaurs waddled around on all fours. Their knobby skin, front-heavy build, and general brutish appearance making them seem like a mad reptilian offensive lineman. Fat little things called dicynodonts rummaged around in the muck like pigs, using their sharp tusks to pry up tasty roots. Lording over it all were the Gorgonopsians, bear-sized monsters who reigned at the top of the food chain, slicing into pariasaur guts and dicynodont flesh with their saber-like canines. This cast of oddballs ruled the world right before the dinosaurs. Then, deep inside, the earth began to rumble. You wouldn't have been able to feel it on the surface, at least when it kicked off, right around 252 million years ago. It was happening 50, maybe even 100 miles underground, in the mantle, the middle layer of the crust-mantle-core sandwich of Earth's structure.